This is Audible.
Hounded, Hellhounds of the North Shore, Book 1. Written by A.S. Green. Narrated by Michael Dickens and Simona Rose. Audio production is by Stephen Kirpis of Vitruvian Sound.
Chapter 1. Cormac. Mid-September. North Shore, Minnesota. Cormac McConnell stood deep in the shadows of the jack pines and lifted his nose to the breeze. Blood, he thought, and the scent was still fresh. It didn't belong to anyone he knew. He was nearly sure of it. But that knowledge brought him no relief. It was still another wounded, probably even dead, and on his watch too. It wasn't the first time. He narrowed his eyes and filtered past the scent of sap and mineral-rich water that rushed down the river toward the Devil's Kettle, one of the many waterfalls that popped up in the hills near Lake Superior. His large paws moved silently along the bank, his nose to the ground, creeping forward. Then, when he reached a narrow spot where he could cross, he settled back on his haunches and sprung forward, landing gracefully on the other side. When he climbed the opposite embankment, he found himself standing outside a circle of ash trees. Cormac's lip curled instinctively at the sight of the fairy ring. In centuries past, it had been his clan's job to guard such places, and nothing good had ever come of it. He lowered his large head and stalked forward, flattening his ears. The wiry black hairs on his back stood up in response to the smell, and a low growl rumbled involuntarily from his throat. But then, as he entered the ring, he went silent and jerked his head. With so much blood in the air, he had expected to find a corpse. Maybe that of a dead animal. Maybe another mutilated fae. What he hadn't expected was to find a living creature. A nearly matured female, maybe early 20s, was crouched on her hands and knees with her shapely ass poised in the air. Given that her scent read as fae, plus the mere fact he found her in a fairy ring, Cormac knew she was a member of the She. However, with her back turned, he couldn't determine her clan. He used the process of elimination. First, it seemed luck was on his side, because her hair fell in long dark spirals against her back. She wasn't one of the white-haired Banshee, which meant he'd live to see another day. She also wasn't wearing black, so more good news. She likely wasn't a Lanonshi, and his mind would remain his own. She wasn't a Cushi, because he knew his own clan. That left the Deenishi, but without seeing the female's eyes, he couldn't know for sure. The Deena clan had made the greatest attempt to adapt to Podrick society, with the exception of their lavender eyes, of course, which they could not change but could hide with contacts. While their willingness to adapt had allowed them to find paying jobs, it had done a number on their talent for hallucination, which had faded over time. In short, the Deena were the least dangerous of all the She clans, and also the most vulnerable. What the hell was she doing out here alone? She had an open suitcase beside her, which was covered in travel stickers. Inside, he spied some balled-up clothes, the spiral edge of a sketch notebook, and a snow globe of all things, but nothing useful for surviving outdoors. Cormac lifted one paw to go. He had work to do. But then the female started cursing and moving her arms rapidly, elbows jerking back, oblivious to his presence. That lack of vigilance could get her killed.
Fucking shit-tastic, stupid, she cried out in furious exasperation.
No sooner did he hear her voice than a terrible rushing sound filled his ears. He shook back his head and shifted from the hound into his other, more communicative form. The illusion of human clothes shifted with him. It took another second before his tongue was nimble enough to issue a warning.
You shouldn't be out here alone, Colleen. It's dangerous.
The She shrieked and jumped to her feet, whirling with arms extended. In each hand she held a worn stick, now tipped up as if they were her only weapons. At the sight of her face, The rushing sound hit him again, filling his ears and nearly bowling him over. The instinct to protect pulled him closer to her, even as his rational mind begged his feet to run. Oh, sweet Danu. It couldn't be true. She was a Podrick, a human. There was no mistaking his reaction. It was just like his father told him it would be. Your head will feel like it's caught in a tornado, son, and it will suck all the air from your lungs. He remembered his father laughing as he recounted his own experience meeting Cormac's mother. May Danu help you, boy, and for God's sake, keep a firm hold on your hound. Cormac took a step closer and his stomach lunged for his throat. Go, he thought. Run. Fate wouldn't be this cruel, not even to you. But he couldn't go. She might be hurt. Despite her devastating attack on his senses, he still had not lost the thread of fresh blood in the air. His eyes scanned the delicious curves of her body, but there were no signs of injury. At least as far as he could see. Was it merely menstrual blood he was scenting? Her wide-eyed gaze hit his face and then descended his body before slowly rising again. She sucked air into her lungs, her high, firm breasts filling out the silky camisole under her unbuttoned flannel shirt. Cormac's cock twitched in his pants. It was not a sensation he enjoyed having in response to anyone, but especially someone like her. Fuck. Why did it have to be someone like her? A Podrick would never be accepted into she society because there were only two types. The first, those too mundane for the she to give any notice. The second, those disciples of St. Podrick who had hunted his kind for centuries. The Black Castle Brethren, or Black Castle for short. It was they whom he hunted. It was they who deserved his vengeance. Where in the hell did you come from? The Podrick asked with a surprising amount of attitude. Cormac rocked back on his heels. The girl obviously had no idea how accurately she'd hit the target. Cormac was Cushy, a hellhound, though he doubted he actually came from hell. More like hell came for him. Again and again and again. You wouldn't believe me if I told you, he said, lifting his nose to the air. Where was that fucking blood coming from? Her expression shifted from surprised annoyance to fear, and he couldn't fault her for that. As a Cushy, Cormac was a large hound, red-eyed and terrifying. As a man, he was no less of a threat. Tall, broad-shouldered and thickly muscled. His glamoured clothes were utilitarian and designed for living rough. Her tiny fists clenched at her sides, those sharp sticks pointed at his groin. Sweet Danu, he thought, mentally invoking the goddess's intercession. Did this girl really think she stood a chance against him? Not that he meant her any harm. Though maybe that was the way to go. Scare her stupid and send her screaming back to the main road and far away from here. She'd eventually run into someone who could help her. And best of all, he could get back to his hunt. Back off, the girl said, moving the sticks to her left hand and putting her other hand in her pocket. I've got mace. He doubted it. I wouldn't use it in this breeze. Well, I have a black belt in karate. Is that so? He asked, taking a step closer. I'll scream. Who would hear you? Her face went pale, making the scattering of tiny freckles on the bridge of her nose stand out in stark relief. Her panic hardened her nipples under the silky camisole. No one, he said, answering his own question. So why don't you run instead? The girl didn't take direction well. She opened her mouth to scream. But before emitting any sound, a heavy drop of thick red liquid landed squarely on her nose with a splat. She made a squeak as her mouth slammed shut, and she slowly tipped her head back to look into the tree branches. Another drop landed on her forehead, and Cormac followed her gaze.
Fuck! He bellowed.
What the hell?
The girl asked, still looking up. Above them, tangled in the branches, was a young female form. Or at least, half of one. Judging by the victim's prim and proper, but now shredded dress, she was likely a Dina She. She was the second one Cormac had found this week, the fifth this month. A growl of sympathy rumbled out of his chest. She didn't deserve this. She probably had a family who depended on her, someone she'd loved. She should be back with her clan, not here. Cormac noticed in his periphery that the human girl's hands were beginning to shake, as were her knees. Podricks could be such weak creatures. She stepped back, away from the dripping corpse, and wiped at the blood splatter on her face.
I think I'm going to...
Be sick, is what Cormac thought she was going to say, or maybe, be on my merry way. Instead, the girl's eyes rolled back in her head and her knees buckled. Cormac caught her as she went down like a cleanly cut tree. Chapter 2. Cormac. He knew it. He fucking knew it. The moment Cormac clapped eyes on the female's firm ass, he should have got the hell away, not looked back, and kept on moving. Now he was moving all right, headed out of the fairy ring with her sweet body draped over his arms, her suitcase in his hand, and her head lolled over his elbow. She moaned and muttered something unintelligible. Cormac pinched her thigh, just because he was annoyed. What the fuck was he supposed to do now? A part of him considered leaving her once they got to the bottom of the hill and out of the woods, pretend like this never happened. Another part thought he should set her on the doorstep of the nearest church. But it was Monday. How long would it be before someone found her? Would she be safe? He supposed he could take her to the police. Say he found her like this, then leave before they asked too many questions, and get back on the road. Get back on the hunt. He'd been hunting the Black Castle for 50 years, and their defensive strategies had paid off. Despite his keen sense of smell, he still had nothing to show for himself in all this time. Recently they'd been doing something to mask their scent, and without that, how was he to tell one Podrick from another? The exception being the one in your arms. He dispatched the thought. All Podricks were alike. Finding the one, or ones, that he sought, was like trying to find a needle in a haystack. A haystack made of steep hills, deep ravines, jack pine, cedar, and maple. He always got close, just minutes too late. Which was why there was another Dina dead, and the sadistic bastard who'd done it was still on the loose. What a serious fuck of a day. Before he started the descent, he glanced behind him at the cairn he'd built to cover the body. Sweet Danu. He was fucking sick of death. The female in his arms sucked in a deep breath, and he looked down, the stark contrast of her chest inflating to his last morbid thought. Frankly, it startled him. Her eyes fluttered open, and she asked,
What's going on?
You fainted.
I don't faint, she said groggily.
Then she closed her eyes and snuggled into him, as if soothed by the gentle rocking motion of his gait. Cormac had a sudden flashback of himself as a pup, his father carrying him up the stairs. It was one of the better memories. Most of them had him clenching his teeth against the pain. The female tucked her face against the side of his neck, her lips pressed just there. God, the feel of her. She was so damn content in his arms. Everything in him wanted to keep her, to hold her, to protect her forever. But for her sake, he couldn't get carried away by fantasies, and his instincts had never served him well in the past. The reality was, he could do none of those things. Not now. Probably not ever. Why did this have to happen? She curled her fingers into his shirt, then inhaled sharply. He looked down just as her eyes flew open and locked on his.
Oh, shit! You!
She struggled to get out of his arms.
Put me down! Put me down!
Happy to oblige, he dropped her feet to the ground and let go. She went down on her ass like a bag of sand. Cormac folded his arms. She looked up, caught his eye again, then crab-walked backwards a few feet before rolling onto her hands and knees. She pushed up to her feet and staggered to the side, sticking out her arm.
Don't touch me!
Relax, Colleen. I'm not going to hurt you.
You're not?
No.
Oh.
She brushed the bits of dry pine needles away from her palms, and her body swayed. She put her hand to her forehead and closed her eyes, staggering a few more steps.
If that's the case, you better pick me up again.
Cormac sighed, hoisted her into his arms, and snagged her suitcase. She curled into him again, and his chest tightened in response, his instinct roaring.
Protect. Keep her.
Not good. He had to get rid of this girl.
I might still be a little lightheaded,
she said, sounding embarrassed.
So it would seem.
He resumed his walk down the hill, now following the river that flowed from the falls and rushed toward Lake Superior at the bottom of the hill.
I'm sorry,
she said, raising her voice to be heard over the sound of rushing water.
Don't be.
It wasn't her fault that Dina was dead, and he wasn't going to blame her for fainting at the sight of a mutilated corpse. He had to see a dozen deaths before he stopped vomiting.
You don't seem very upset, she said,
sounding confused. Seen it before. His voice came out like a growl, and his arms tightened around her, caging her protectively to his chest.
You've seen what before?
She asked. Cormac tucked his chin to look at her face. Her delicate dark eyebrows were drawn together over startling grey-green eyes. Clearly, they were having two different conversations.
Had she forgotten what she'd seen?
Had her brain gone into self-preservation mode and she'd repressed the last 2 minutes? He frowned, and her face flushed into a beautiful shade of pink.
Hey,
she said, looking over her shoulder in the direction he was carrying her.
Where are you taking me?
Cormac clenched his teeth, then repeated his warning from before.
Out of the woods. You shouldn't have been in so deep, Colleen.
First, my name's not Colleen. It's Megan. Megan Walsh.
Cormac raised one dark eyebrow. She looked away as if she regretted giving her full name. Then she continued with an air of irritation.
Second, it seemed like a good enough place to camp.
Camp?
He asked, confused. You have a tent then? There certainly wasn't one in her little suitcase, and he hadn't seen anything else around her.
I figured the trees would be some kind of shelter, and if I could have got a fire started...
Christ, is that what she'd been trying to do with those two sticks?
This girl was a bigger mess than he originally thought. He didn't know whether to laugh or to roar in frustration.
Why were you needing to camp?
She sighed dramatically.
This douchebag I met last night promised to drive me all the way to Canada.
She paused there for a second before letting go of the rest.
He dumped me on the road when he realized the only kind of ride I was looking for was the kind in his car, if you get me.
He got her.
It pissed him off. It also made the rushing sound in his ears grow stronger.
You're Canadian? He asked.
No. I'm from Chicago.
You should go home, he said, while the beast inside him roared in disagreement.
Megan rolled her eyes.
Brilliant idea, if I had one.
This information brought Cormac to a stop. His arms tightened as if he wanted to be the shelter she was looking for. It was one thing for him to be homeless on the road, quite another for her to be all alone. Still, it was nice to know they had something in common.
I understand.
She looked up at his face, surprised.
You do?
Aye, but it doesn't mean you weren't being stupid. You were standing inside a fairy ring. It's dangerous. She snorted.
Is that some cute superstition from the old country? Your accent. You sound a little Irish or something.
Cormac's body recoiled at her insinuation that he was a Padraig. There's nothing cute about a fairy ring, and it's not superstitious to appreciate danger. They were still following the path that ran parallel to the river. When Cormac saw a good place to cross, he turned for it. Megan tensed in his arms.
What are you doing?
Crossing.
No.
What? Why?
I'm kind of, afraid of water. Sorry, that's...
Say no more. And Cormac returned to the path. The last thing he wanted to do was give her more reason to be afraid.
Actually, she said, pushing against his chest. You know what? I think you should put me down.
So you can fall on your ass again. He didn't have time for this back and forth. He could find a safe place for her more quickly if he just carried her. Even faster if she didn't freak out at how fast he could run. Quicker still, if his hound took over and she'd agree to hold on and ride.
I won't fall, she said. I've got this. I just needed another couple minutes. I'm good.
Let's at least get out of the woods before you try any more stunts. He felt her body tense against his. He liked it better when she went soft.
But you're being very cool about this, but aren't I a little heavy?
He glanced down to see if she was joking. Christ, she was being serious. He grunted. You're not heavy. In fact, her weight was barely perceptible.
Oh, she said, sounding surprised. Well, good.
Then she twisted her neck to see they were now at the edge of the woods with a blacktop road in front of them. He set her feet on the ground. Her hand rose to her neck and scratched.
Do you happen to know if there's a clinic nearby?
A clinic? Is something wrong? He couldn't help the swell of panic that rose inside of him.
Probably not. It's just that, don't laugh, but I think I might have got into something. Maybe a little hallucinogenic up on that hill.
He stared at her intently, wondering where she was going with this. Her face flushed.
I thought I was seeing some pretty crazy things. There was this bloody...
Her face contorted in horror.
And now I'm itching like crazy.
He looked down again, seeing for the first time the red mottled rash on her neck. She lifted the edge of her camisole to see how far down the rash had spread. She slapped at his hands before it got any higher than her ribs.
What are you doing? Stop that!
It's all over your stomach. Are you feverish? He couldn't tell by touching her. His own body ran too hot.
Now that you mention it...
I'll get you to a doctor. The nearest clinic was about 15 miles away. He'd have to carry her, and there was no way she'd understand how he did that so easily. Not unless he got creative.
How far is the town?
She asked, glancing nervously down the road.
Still too far. Sorry about this, but...
She returned her gaze to him.
Sorry about what? Hey, what's going on?
Megan took a step back. Her hand went to her head.
You're going fuzzy.
Cormac pulled his lips back to show his very white canines. He flashed her a devilish smile and quickly shifted into the hound. Megan Walsh took one look at him, and it was lights out. So much for her not being a fainter.
Chapter 3. Megan. Megan Walsh braced herself against the edge of her chair. The examination room was painted a calming light blue, and it was brightly lit with fluorescent tubes mounted in the ceiling panels. It was germ-free. Danger-free. and had all the familiar trappings of a medical clinic. But Megan Walsh was in trouble. Loads of trouble. So much fucking trouble. First, she had zero memory of how she got into this brightly lit, antiseptic room. Second, she had no insurance. And finally, and perhaps this should have been first on her list, the seriously scary, but also seriously hot, guy from the hilltop was in the room with her, leaning against the opposite wall with his massive arms crossed, muscles flexing, and looking supremely pissed off. She didn't know what his problem was. It wasn't like she asked him to be here. Not that she minded the view. He was very tall, well over 6 feet. His wavy dark brown hair was sun-bleached at the ends, and there was a kink in it just below his ears, as if he often kept it tied back. He had a trim beard with a small scar just visible at the corner of his mouth. Not to mention the most amazing, unblinking gray eyes that made her throat tighten, her stomach lurch, and her heart pound. The fact he wore a black, tight-fitting, long-sleeved t-shirt that showed the cut lines of his pecs didn't help much. His pants were also black and made of heavy-duty material that was definitely worn, but showed no holes. He had a shit-hot tulle leather belt with a small holster for a seriously wicked-looking knife, and another brown leather strap that went across his chest at an angle and was probably used for carrying tools or something. She guessed it could have also been some kind of retro fashion statement, but she didn't think so. This guy wasn't dressing to impress. He looked more like someone hell-bent on taking names and kicking ass. In fact, the last memory she had was of him carrying her down the hill. But he wasn't so strong that he could have carried her the whole way here, was he? That is, wherever here was. Maybe, since she ran into him in the woods, he was some kind of rugged lumberjack type. His name was probably something lumberjacky, like Joe, or Garth, or Max. No, Mac. Suddenly feeling like she was somehow missing something, Megan's eyes moved to the chair beside her. She sucked in a breath of relief when she spotted her suitcase. Mac hadn't left it behind. Thank God. She couldn't afford to lose anything else. Megan wrapped her fingers around the edge of her chair while the doctor examined her eyes. Mac's frown carved deeper into his handsome face, and she remembered. Holy shit. The real last memory she'd had was of him turning into an enormous black dog with red gleaming eyes. She must have gotten to some seriously nasty shit on that hilltop for all the hallucinations she was having. You can go, or... She let the sentence dangle, realizing she couldn't really call him Mac out loud. He'd think she was nuts. I can handle myself from here, and... I mean, you must have some place you need to be. I'll just make sure you're okay first, he said, his heated gaze penetrating her skin. Megan blinked up at him. How bizarre was that? It wasn't like he knew her. He certainly didn't owe her anything. Anything more, for sure. If he'd written, "Do a good deed" on his schedule for the day, he could consider that box ticked. So why wasn't he leaving? Everybody always left. She glanced to the right, toward the doctor's desk. Taped to the wall were several school photos of a girl and two boys. She wondered if they were photos of patients or of his own children. She wished she could have been part of a family. Any family, really, but especially a family that had a physician for a father. She bet nothing bad happened when your father knew how to take care of things. She didn't know what her own father did. The little girl's photo was in a blue and yellow paper frame, shaped like a daisy. It made Megan remember the fleecy daisy pillow she'd made in seventh grade home economics. More than once over the last 3 years, she wished she'd brought that pillow with her when she hit the road. Keep your eyes on my finger, please, said the doctor as he moved it to one side, then the other. Up, then down. She followed it with her eyes, and when he was done, he sat back in his chair, deep in thought. Megan used the moment of silence to examine Mac's face. It wasn't the first time she'd looked at him, obviously, but it was the first time she could do so in the company of a third party. It was the doctor's presence that convinced her she wasn't dreaming and that this guy was real. Unworldly in the looks department, for sure, but real. She dropped her gaze to his mouth, and his broad lips parted on a breath, exposing very white teeth. When she raised her gaze, his eyes were intense, steely gray, like storm clouds, and very focused on her. Her throat tightened, making it hard to swallow. "This rash," the doctor said, touching the itchy welts on her neck. Mac tensed, and she could have sworn she heard him growl. She must have imagined it, though, because the doctor didn't react. "How far is it spread?"
"To her belly," Mac chimed in, and her eyes darted to him.
"Have you taken anything recently?" the doctor asked. "Prescription? Non-prescription?" Megan returned her focus to the doctor and raised her eyebrows disdainfully. "Are you asking me if I'm on drugs?" "Are you?" he asked, as if he was used to avoidance. Megan pinched her lips together. For all the things she thought she'd seen on that hilltop, she supposed it was a fair question. "No." "Are you allergic to animals?" the doctor asked. Mac narrowed his gray eyes. At the question? At her? She couldn't tell. "No. I used to have a cat, and I had a couple friends with dogs. Animals have never bothered me. Mold, dust, penicillin, bees, any food? I don't think so." "Have you had a rash like this before?" the doctor asked. "Once or twice." "Mm-hmm," he said, getting out a magnifier and clipping it to his eyeglasses. Then he leaned in to study her irritated skin. "Do you recall the circumstances?" "The last time was after a Christmas Eve mass with my aunt and uncle. I even got a fever, so I had to miss the dinner and all the festivities." Not that her aunt and uncle were much into festivities. The doctor looked back at Mac, then to her. "Where were the two of you?"
"Near the Devil's Kettle," Mac said, which was good because she had no idea.
Megan blinked, remembering the terrifying sound of the falls they'd passed in the woods. "Did you touch anything unusual when you were there?" the doctor asked her.
"Just some leaves and stuff."
"She was near a grove of ash trees," Mac put in. The doctor looked doubtful, then he did a quick Google search on his computer. "They're obviously not flowering in September. I suppose you could have been triggered by something that was brought into the area by someone else. On their clothes, maybe, or their shoes. Were there other people with you?" Mac's head jerked up, and his eyes flashed. She looked away from him and focused back on the doctor. "I've been alone since about lunchtime. I didn't start itching until recently."
Could she really have an allergic reaction to something or someone who'd been in the area?
Mac asked, and then his eyes flicked to Megan with a look of concern.
"It's a theory," the doctor said, "but only that. Perhaps I should get a better look at the rash on your torso. Would you please remove your shirt?"
Mac's body jerked, and not like he was getting ready to excuse himself for the sake of propriety. In fact, the way his glance slashed toward the doctor, it was more like he was unhappy about the doctor asking such a question. This surprised her, not only because it was just plain weird, he was a doctor, for Christ's sake, but also because the guy should be eager to be back on his way. Here was his chance. "Excuse me," she said, in a way designed to say, "Now's the time to go, buddy." Though, truth be told, the idea of undressing anywhere near this guy was kind of intriguing. Mac's eyes jerked to Megan's and his nostrils flared. Then, with a growl, she was sure she hadn't imagined it that time, he pushed himself off the wall and strode out of the room, slamming the door behind him. Now what the hell was that all about?
Chapter 4. Cormac. Cormac tried to leave. He meant to leave. He thought he had it in hand when he walked out of the exam room, down the hall, through the lobby, and out the front doors of the clinic. He told himself he wasn't irritated by seeing that doctor's hands on Megan's body. He told himself it was perfectly fine that that man should see her disrobed while he was sent away. But deep in his gut, the last thing he felt was fine. He pushed those feelings down deep and kept walking because it wasn't true. It couldn't be true. There was no way in hell she could be his Anam Cara, his fated mate. It was unnatural. She was human, beneath him. And then he was thinking about her, beneath him. Damn. His body nearly turned of its own accord, and he strode back toward the clinic. Wait, what the hell am I doing? This is insane. Cormac turned around again, shoved his hands in his pockets, and headed away from the clinic with his head bowed low. He had a job to do. To the Black Castle, the Shi were unnatural, ungodly, and needing to be eradicated from the earth. They'd started with Ireland, and then, after many of the Shi escaped to North America, brought their twisted mission to the North Shore. It was time someone ended it. He was going to end it, and he couldn't afford a distraction, least of all from a Pádraig. Cormac froze in his tracks. But if she held the key, if the doctor's theory was right, and she really was allergic to whomever had been in the fairy ring before them, if she was reacting to whatever this latest guy had been using to mask his scent, that would be the reason to keep her close. She could help my cause, and I could make sure she was safe. Warm. Fed. He shook his head, like he could not believe he was actually doing this. He turned and walked toward the clinic again, his eyes on the pavement. He took 5 strides, growled low in his throat, then turned around again. Sweet Danu. What was he thinking? He worked alone. Always alone. He could not succumb to any contrary impulse, and the last thing he needed was to drag a human girl along with him wherever he went. It was preposterous. Ah! He whirled and headed back toward the clinic. Christ, he was making himself dizzy.
What are you doing?
Yelled an already familiar voice. So familiar the sound pierced straight to his heart. Cormac jerked to a stop, and his head shot up. Megan. She was standing on the pavement in front of the clinic, with her suitcase in one hand and a small paper sack in the other.
You're going to wear a groove in the sidewalk if you keep that up.
He met her eyes. Fuck. They stole his breath. They were so beautiful. Her thin camisole barely concealed the effects of the cool breeze. Her dark curls fell over her flannel-clad shoulders. So stunning, she could have been a fairy herself. It only took a few seconds for him to close most of the gap that separated them, though he stayed far enough away to resist touching. His gaze dropped to the paper sack. Did the doctor give you something to feel better? She gave a little self-deprecating laugh.
For the rash, maybe. I don't think anything is going to cure me of crazy. I swear to God, I was telling the truth when I said I'm not on any drugs, but at first I thought I saw...
She glanced up, as if looking into a tree.
And then I thought I saw you turn into a...
She paused, and her cheeks flushed. Cormac frowned. She might only be a Pádraig, but he didn't like her questioning her sanity.
Well, never mind.
She held up the bag from the clinic's pharmacy.
I'm guessing you paid for this, am I right? No one ever asked me for money.
Cormac had done exactly that, but he let his silence be his confirmation. He got the strong sense she didn't like being in debt to anyone. She confirmed his suspicion when she blurted out,
I can't pay you back right away, but I will.
He shrugged. I was happy to do it. And he'd be happy to do a lot more. She was too skinny. There was barely anything in her suitcase, and he suspected her wallet was empty.
Well, Thanks.
She raised her hand and turned to go. For everything. You've been really nice.
Megan,
he said sharply, reaching for her wrist but not actually grabbing it.
Wait.
Wait for what? Let her go.
No, make her stay. Keep her.
No, not keep her.
Great.
Now his brain was stutter-stepping just like his feet. He'd never felt so confused in his whole damn life.
You know, she said, I never did get your name.
He looked up, surprised. During the 15-mile run, he'd come to feel like he knew Megan Walsh. Knew her very well. It was a lie, of course. He didn't know her. But here, she didn't even know his name.
It's Cormac. Cormac McConnell.
There was a flash of surprise in her eyes, then a self-satisfied smile spread across her lips.
Anyone ever call you Mac?
No, he said, confused by her question. Then he added, are you going to start? She shook her head.
Thanks again for helping me. I didn't expect...
It was no trouble. But wasn't that the most colossal lie? The mere sight of her had his heart raging in his chest, his instinctive urges driving him toward the madness. And he had no choice but to push it all down. She was the very definition of trouble. Still, a little trouble would be worth it if she could get him closer to his goal. He could get her some food, make sure her head was on straight, then make his proposition and let the cards fall where they may. If she said no, then so be it. Nothing ventured, nothing gained.
I'm sure you had somewhere to go today, she went on. Someone to see. I won't hold you up any longer.
Her goodbye was interrupted by the sound of her belly growling. The hound in him leapt forward with only one thought on its mind. Protect.
You're hungry,
Cormac said. I'll buy you dinner. Her lips parted and her eyes flashed with grateful relief. But then, just as quickly, her happy expression faltered.
I don't think that's a good idea. Thank you again. I meant it. But I'm good from here.
Then just a drink, he said quickly. She let out a small breathy laugh and rolled her eyes.
And here we go.
What does that mean? We can find a bar. We can talk. Cormac did a little internal headshake. He didn't talk. In fact, sometimes days went by without him uttering a word.
Oh, right, she said. Talk.
She made air quotes around the word. He tipped his head to the side and tried to make sense of her attitude.
Are you always this cynical?
Her eyes jerked up to his.
Of course.
Well, he thought, at least that will help keep her safe. The breeze picked up a long curl and blew it across the top of her head, dropping it on the opposite side. Cormac resisted the temptation to move it back. His eyes left her hair and settled on hers.
Regardless, let me buy you dinner.
I didn't say yes to a drink yet, and now it's back to dinner. Cormac stepped closer, though there were still a couple of feet between them.
Have dinner with me, he said, his voice going low.
Hear me out on something. If you're not into it, we'll say goodbye. Megan still hesitated, but when her stomach growled again, he knew she'd give in. A wave of satisfaction washed over him when she said,
okay then, but just dinner.
Chapter 5. Megan. The bar was small and dark. The stylized signage had to be at least 60 years old, and most of the patrons, whose only style said North Woods, looked like they'd been there just as long. An old man with bushy white eyebrows stood behind the bar. Straight-backed wooden booths lined the sides of the room, and a dozen tables were set evenly across the floor. The place was nearly full. Megan suggested a table by the door, but instead Cormac led her toward the most private spot, a booth in the back corner. She was instantly on alert,
but like an idiot, she followed. When they reached it, he sat on the side facing the door. Megan set her suitcase on the opposite bench and sat down, but still found it difficult to look at him directly. He was too good-looking for his own good. For her own good. Like, seriously. What kind of masochist was she? If she wasn't careful, she was going to let her body make decisions that she should really leave up to her brain. Her very sober brain. A waitress, arguably older than the bartender himself, limped over and set square papered napkins on the table. "Welcome," she said. Then her eyes landed on Megan's suitcase. "Traveling through?"
"Aye, and whiskey," Cormac said, apparently not one for civilities. "No ice, and one of each of those things written on the board."
Then he jerked his chin in Megan's direction.
"Whiskey for her, too."
"I can order for myself, thank you." The corners of his smooth lips twitched, and he nodded at her to go ahead. She immediately felt a flush of heat in her cheeks when the waitress turned to her. "Ginger ale, please," she said. The waitress nodded and hobbled away. Megan watched the old woman go, then she turned toward Cormac and leaned into the table. "You could be more polite."
"Would you like that?"
he asked, as if he sincerely cared what she'd like. She settled back against the booth. "Is this your usual spot?"
"I think my dad used to come here, but I've never been. Other than the cottage I've been renting the last couple days, I'm rarely anywhere more than once."
Before Megan could process the information he'd shared, she was distracted by a family at a nearby table. The parents were trying to wrestle their toddler back onto a seat. All he wanted to do was stand on the chair. Cormac caught her watching.
"You like kids?"
"I don't really know," she said, turning toward him. "I didn't have any brothers or sisters. Not even many friends growing up. I know I like to watch them, though. Do you? Like kids, that is?" Cormac's gaze left Megan's face and drifted over to the family. The little boy had leaned over too far, and his chair toppled. The father caught him before his head cracked on the table.
I like kids.
That little guy reminds me of my youngest brother, Madigan. He was always doing stupid shit like that." The corners of his mouth had been tipped up with reminiscence, but then his expression quickly darkened. The waitress returned with their drinks. Megan took a sip, then choked when she saw that Cormac's glass was poured nearly to the brim with straight whiskey. No ice. He didn't seem to notice her reaction, but rather seemed to be concentrating on keeping their conversation going.
"No brothers or sisters, huh? I can't imagine what that would be like."
Megan was grateful that he was willing to lead. She had driven for hours in silence with the douchebag who'd agreed to take her to Canada. "My dad left when I was 4. I don't really remember much about him, except for how he smelled. Sometimes I'll pass someone who uses the same kind of aftershave, and I'll remember him, but like I said, not much. My mom died a year after he did. I remember her." A sincere look of pain crossed his face. Not pity, but pain.
"I'm so sorry. How did she die?"
Megan stared into his beautiful gray eyes for a long beat, then checked herself. "I'm not exactly sure. OD'd, I think. My aunt and uncle never really explained. Probably thought I was too young to understand, and by the time I got older, well, it didn't really matter how it happened. She was gone, and the details weren't going to change anything."
"You miss her," he said, and he sounded like he understood.
"Every day."
"Is that who raised you then?
Your aunt and uncle? They must have been good people to take care of you." Megan felt her lips twitch. She could find the humor in his question, but only because she'd put enough distance between that time of her life and now. When she didn't answer right away, Cormac's eyebrows drew together.
"Sure,"
she said, trying to diffuse his look of concern. "My uncle didn't talk to me much. He smoked 2 packs a day and watched a lot of the Blackhawks. And the Cubs and the Bears, for that matter. He barely left his recliner, except for when he and my aunt went to their weekly meeting. It was like a social club for history buffs. God, why was she telling him all this? He couldn't really care. She was going to bore him to death. But he was looking at her expectantly, silently encouraging her to go on. Maybe? Oh well, in for a penny, in for a pound. My Aunt Darlene, on the other hand, she hovered. And I mean hovered. I swear she'd go reading through my underwear drawer when I was at school. Looking for drugs, I suppose. Like mother, like daughter, right? I think she'd already decided how I was going to turn out. It was like every morning she got up and thought, this is the day Megan flunks out of school, or comes home stumbling drunk, or pregnant. She held up her hand before he got any ideas. None of which happened, by the way. Then she noticed the intense way he was still staring at her. Sorry, I'm talking too much. How about you? Parents? Mine both died when I was young, though I wasn't as young as you were. Megan swallowed and nodded her head, taking that in. What was your mother like? He shrugged and looked away. On Sunday nights, she'd make us s'mores in the fireplace, but she made them with peanut butter cups instead of plain chocolate. The corners of Megan's mouth tipped up. I get the feeling she had a bit of a sweet tooth. Cormac's face lit up with a grin, the likes of which she'd yet to see on him. He turned back toward her, and she thought there might even be some extra moisture in his eyes. Aye, he said. That's exactly right. A beat of silence passed between them, and then another. Finally, she said, sometimes life sucks. He raised his glass and tipped it toward her. She raised hers, and they clinked them together. That it does, he said. She set her glass down, stared at it for a long second, then cleared her throat. Okay, shoot.
Shoot?
You said there was something you wanted to talk about? Cormac shook his head, then leaned in. First, I feed you. His insistence gave Megan a warm, safe feeling like she hadn't felt in a very long time. And you can show me your drawings. Megan blinked. Granted, her brain had been on the fritz as of late, but she was pretty sure she'd never mentioned her sketches to him before. How did you know about my drawings? Up on the hill. I saw your sketchbook in your suitcase. I assume the pages aren't blank. You like art? God, he was too good to be true. But she didn't usually show people her works in progress. Even when they were being nice about it, she could feel their judgment. The last guy she'd shown her drawings to called them doodles. Aye, Megan, I like art. Cormac's steely gray eyes locked on hers. Then they warmed, taking on a smoldering heat, which brought a red-hot awareness to the apex of her thighs. She stalled, crossing her legs to quell the ache. Well, if you want to see, but fair warning, they're not much. She clicked open her bag, then slid the book in front of him. Cormac flipped through the first couple pages of urban street scenes, mostly brick wall details, the old corner sign for Garrett Street where she used to live, a still life of a discarded beer bottle lying beside a fire hydrant. Then he came to the one so different from all the rest. It was of a woman, standing there on a blank canvas, her back to the viewer, her hair lifted on the breeze. It wasn't from real life like the others, but actually from a reoccurring dream she'd started having shortly after leaving home.
Amazing, Cormac muttered.
What? She asked. She couldn't tell if that meant good or bad.
The level of detail. They're nearly photographic.
He sounded almost proud of her, which was both really nice and seriously weird. Still, her face warmed at his praise. Then he flipped the page, and his expression fell flat. Megan looked to see which drawing had lost her his admiration. Her heart sank when she saw it because she'd just drawn it earlier that day, and she thought it was one of her best. Apparently she'd been wrong about that. The sketch was of a good-looking guy with dark, tousled hair and lush eyelashes. She'd seen him in a diner shortly after the douchebag dumped her in the middle of bumfuck nowhere. He'd been there with his large extended family. There were so many of them, they took up 3 booths, which is why he'd captured her attention. Megan often liked to imagine what it would be like to have a family, to have so many people to love her. But she couldn't think about things like that for more than a few seconds. She hadn't had a real family of her own for a very long time. Eventually, the memories and the longing would creep in and force her to look away. This time, however, she hadn't been able to resist looking. She thought the guy had cottoned on to what she was doing, but he pretended not to notice. As a result, she'd been able to capture the moment, his casual attitude, right down to the amused glint in his eyes. Cormac closed the book with an abrupt snap and frowned. Was that of your boyfriend? No. Why? No reason, he said, relaxing. You're good. Thanks, she muttered, suddenly feeling self-conscious again. She pulled the book back toward her. So how old are you? He asked. 21. Megan braced for 20 questions. And did you drive up from Chicago this morning? What? For some reason, this question surprised her, probably because she hadn't thought about Chicago in a while. She tried not to. Oh, no, I left there 3 years ago. This morning I was in Des Moines, Iowa. You go to school there? He asked. No, I don't go to school. So what's in Iowa? Cornfields, she said, making a joke. There was no way he needed her whole life story, and she'd already told him about trying to hitch a ride to Canada with a complete douchebag stranger she'd only met last night. God, what he must think of me. The food came out, and several platters were laid on their table. There was a basket of chicken strips and onion rings, which smelled amazing, but also deep-fried pickles, cheese curds, a bowl of beer cheese soup with popcorn floating on top, and a generous slice of French silk pie. Whoa. She couldn't remember the last time she'd seen so much food all at once. Eat until you're full, Cormac said. I'll eat what you leave behind. We'll have to get a doggy bag. To this, Cormac threw back his head and laughed. It was a beautiful sound, full and rich, made even more beautiful by the startled reaction of those around them. It made his gray eyes go wet and silvery, crinkling at the corners. Dig in, Megan. I'll nurse my drink. She hesitated, but then the delicious aromas hit her nose and her stomach growled. Besides the bitter diner coffee, she hadn't eaten anything solid since the bag of ranch potato chips she'd had for breakfast in the douchebag's car. She was vaguely aware of Cormac watching her as she sampled everything. It all tasted amazing. And then she got to the basket of golden fried cheese curds. She took a bite and chewed slowly, closing her eyes. They were so velvety, so salty and delicious, she couldn't help herself. She let out a low, slow groan of pure, satisfied pleasure. When she opened her eyes, Cormac was staring at her, no longer laughing. And he looked downright hungry, but not for food. What? Did men have to make everything so sexual? They're good. He didn't answer, but kept staring at her with an intensity that set her blood on fire. And then, mortifyingly, her body continued to respond to him with a rush of wet warmth between her legs. Cormac's nostrils flared, and if she didn't know any better, she'd swear he knew. This was bad. Seriously bad. So where exactly are we? She asked, shoveling more in and pretending not to care what he thought. Grand Marais, he said, the momentary intensity fading from his face. Okay. She picked up a chicken strip and dipped it in ketchup. And where's that? About 18 miles northeast of Lutzen. She rolled her eyes and took a bite, talking with her mouth full. And where's that? Now, finally, his face truly relaxed and he smiled at her sarcastic tone. Do you even know what state you're in? She looked sheepishly around the room as if searching for clues, and he shook his head incredulously. What? She asked defensively. Then she swallowed and reached for an onion ring. I was asleep for most of the time the douchebag was driving. You're in Minnesota, on the north shore of Lake Superior.
about 35 miles south of Canada and about 15 miles from where I found you. Megan lowered her hand from her mouth and gave her head a little shake of incredulity.